Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. We're learning six lines down. Tanu Rabbanan, Avel Shabbat Rishona Enu Yotze Mipetach Beito. On the first Shabbat, he doesn't leave his house. Shnia, on the second Shabbat, Yotze VeEnu Yoshev Bimkomo. He leaves his house. He attends the shul. He just doesn't sit in the seat or his normal location. Shlishit Yoshev Bimkomo. He sits in his place. VeEnu Midaber, and he doesn't speak. Revit, harihu kol adam. On the fourth week, he goes back to being like everybody else in the shul. So over here, you see a progression in terms of the individual's reintegration, we'll call it, into society. Being an avel takes one outside of society, out of the normal flow of life. The idea that a person is bodeid, alone, and is grappling with the existential loss that he's just experienced. And that takes them a little bit out of the community. The whole idea of the Nichum Avelim is that the community comes and tries to bring the person back, make them feel that they're not alone, makes them feel that they're amongst the tzibur that cares and can sympathize, can experience the loss together with them. And then it takes time for the person to reintegrate. So the progression here is on the Shabbatot, which are the public as a reintegration of the individual. The time that they leave the house, they go back into the public sphere, that there's a progression of the individual back into the society, which is on the Shabbat Rishona, he doesn't leave his house. We're going to see in a second that the Gemara is going to say that's obvious because he's in Avel on the first week. Then in the second week, he doesn't sit in his normal place. The third week, he sits but does not speak. And the Revi, Tarihu Kechol Adam, that he's like everybody else. Revi Hudomer, Lo Hutzruchu Lomar Shabbat Rishona, Lo Yotze Mipetach Beito. The first Shabbat, you don't have to say that. Everybody's coming to him. He's in Avel. Everybody's being Nachem him. He doesn't leave his house on that first Shabbat because he is in Avel. Since he's in Avel and everybody's coming to him, of course he's not leaving his house. People are going to be visiting him. El Shnia. So he has the whole process deferred a week, which is on Shnia. Enu Yotze Mipetach Beito. On the second week, he doesn't leave his house. Shlishit Enu Yoshev Bimkomo. The third week, he doesn't sit in his place. On the fourth week, he sits in place, doesn't speak. On the fifth week, he's like everybody else. The progression also correlates with the Shloshim, in that the number of Shabbatot within the Shloshim could be anywhere between 4 and 5 Shabbatot that are in that period of time. So there is a correlation between moving the Shiva to Shloshim and the progression of this person's integration back into the society. Rabbi Tosafot here mentions that these practices seem to have gone somewhat by the wayside, and we don't have this progression, we don't have this idea. Some of these we do, which is the idea that a person switches their location during their Avelut, they don't sit in the normal location, they move. But other than that, we don't really see any manifestation of these practices. Tosafot already says, V'yushami posek halacha kedivrei mosif biyamim. Halacha is like the one who adds on to the number of days, which sounds like it's like Rabbi Yehuda. Veraiti kashaiti katan. I saw when I was a young man, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Zkeni, the Ri, shlo haya yoshev bimkomo ad shavua revi'i. He didn't return to his normal location until the fourth week. Velo yadati tamo. And I don't know why he didn't do this. Why didn't he go back to his normal location on the fourth week? The layout here in the Gemara is that shlishit yoshev bimkomo ve'enu midaber. By the third week already you sit in your normal place, you just don't speak. You don't have the normal social interactions that you would have. So he says, I don't know why he did that. Then he speculates and he says, V'shema tamo ki rabbanan, u'mishum detzarech liyashiv bimkomo ve'inu midaber. He says, well, he realized that he couldn't, in reality, sit in his normal location and not speak and not socialize. So what he did was, tov yoter sheyashiv chutz limikomo, shema in isur ledaber kim bimkomo. He says, well, if I don't sit in my normal location, maybe that restriction against socializing will not be there. I mean, that you need one indication of change. So if I just sit in another location, that will be enough or that'll suffice instead of sitting in my normal location and not socializing. So here already you see them playing a little bit with this idea of what exactly is going on with these changes. So maybe, like today, the practice to move your place and not sit in your normal place, that's sufficient in terms of the indication of the person being ba'avelut. And you don't have to go through this whole process. Again, we don't have as much of this, I call it the public side of Avelut. It's very clear in the time of the Gemara that the public and the publicity is very, very much a part of Avilut. The Avel during the Regel, and part of why a person cannot be an Avel during the Regel is because it is not a private issue. If it was just a private issue, maybe you could argue. I'm not saying that that's the case, because also we live in the world, the private world of an individual. He also has a clash between the simcha and the pain and the anguish of the Avilut. But in terms of the public for an Avel, if a person is an Avel during the Regel, that means that his door is open to the public, and the public is going to be in and out of his house, coming into his house. I mean, it changes the dynamic of the community, because the community now will be visiting the Avel, spending time with the Avel, and it will color the nature of those days. And therefore, if the Avel keeps his Avelut, he not only affects himself, he affects the community around him who's going to be coming to be Menachem the Avel. And basically his house, and you know this, when you go to be Menachem the Avel, becomes a public thoroughfare. I mean, it becomes a part of the community at that point. It's no longer a private house, it becomes a public area. And so it does affect the nature or the feeling of the Regel. So that's why we say no Avelut during the Regel, because it's a stira with the Regel. It's a problem with the Regel, because it doesn't just involve the individual, it involves the community as a whole. Again, today we have some of that in the Nichum Avelim, but less so in the public sense in the shul, and therefore maybe this reintegration in the shul is less important or less of an issue, because we don't have as much of a public displays of Avelut and the person returning and integrating into society, because so much of what we do is in our private homes. And so much of the individual today is about their privacy and their own home versus the public in their day. Very much everything was a part of the street, everything was a part of the community. Everybody knew everybody's business. You lived in a very small community. That's not as much true today, and maybe that's what changed the dynamic. Again, we have residuals of this, of changing one's location when they come back into the shul. Even though the Rama says that he doesn't think there's any source for the fact that one changes their place for 30 days or 12 months for a parent, nevertheless, he says he wouldn't mess around with the minhag. The Orach HaShulchan disagrees with the Rama and says that there is a basis for changing one's place out of our Gemara. And he writes, Ulaniyat dati nira diyesh na minhag zesh shoresh. There is a basis for this minhag. V'kvar kadam nuchom minhagei tanchumim. And he says, all the minhagim of consolation of the mourners, we don't have anymore. All those earlier practices have gone away. And therefore he says that the practices that are mentioned here in the Gemara are not midina d'avelut, but rather the minhag of the community. And that over time, the minhagim of the community change. And this idea of changing one's seat is also part of the minhag of the community. It also preserves the difference between krovim and father and mother. And therefore, that is our way of doing this, and we're not bound by the way they did it in the past. Each community develops its own minhagim with regards to these matters. And he says that this is not a new phenomenon, because in the time of the Gonim, and in Ashkenaz, and the time of the Rivash, all these minhagim changed. They already note that the minhagim are changing, and that's why the Rama ends off, Kikol makom lefi minhago, every place according to its minhag, because minhag is the central part of this idea of nichum avilim and how the avil interacts with the public as a whole. So as opposed to kfiata mita, tifata rosh, and the chalitza that we mentioned, which are ikar dinei avilut, and there we really have to explain why we don't practice them, this is really part of the minhagim of nichum, and by that, minhag is the king, and it determines what the practices are based on minhagim of the communities, and we're not necessarily bound by what the Gemara says. The Gemara is telling us what the minhag was in that time, but those minhagim have developed over time, and the minhag today is that people change the location within the shul, but that's it. None of the other things that are mentioned here in the Gemara. All right. Tan Rabbanan. Kol shloshim yom l'nisuim. Person has to wait 30 days before they can get married. Meita ishto. If his wife passes away, asur lisa isha acheret, ad sheyavru alav shlosha regalim. He may not marry another woman until 3 regalim have passed. Rabbi Yehuda omer, regal rishon v'sheni asur, the first 2 regalim is asur, shlishi mutar. On the third one he is mutar. Now I'm going to do a little more and we'll come back and discuss this. V'im ein lo banim, mutar lisa la'alter. If he does yet to accomplish the mitzvah pru or vu, then he's allowed to marry immediately. Mishum bitul piriya urivya. Because if he doesn't marry and he defers the marriage, then he's going to be postponed doing this mitzvah. This mitzvah we've seen numerous times in the Gemara is a very fundamental mitzvah. So fundamental that it might be true not only of Jews, but it might be a general statement, which is that the pasuk that we always quote is Lo tohu vira'at u'yeshevet yitzara. Shem didn't create the world to be desolate, he created the world to be populated. I mean, populating the world, having children, is such a fundamental mitzvah that it might apply not only to Jews, but even to non-Jews. And it might again trump, in certain cases, we were override or overlook certain restrictions in order to have pru urvu accomplished. So here again, you see this. Now, normally a person is not allowed to marry for whatever duration is laid out over here. The exception is that if he hasn't accomplished the mitzvah pru urvu, it's so fundamental to the individual and their married life that it's important that they do it and not wait. You also have the same problem where the father is left. He's now widowed and he is left with young children, which are impossible for him to take care of in the sense that he has to go out and work and he doesn't have babysitters coming around. Marriage is vital for him in order to have these children survive and be brought up properly. So mutar li'alter. Again, he's allowed to marry right away. Mipnei parnasatan. Because of the support of these children. Parnasatan, I think, has two meanings here. It might be from his ability to support the family, but as well as the care that is needed for these children. Both because a mother figure is important in the nurturing of the children, but also from a practical standpoint. If the father's working or going out of the house, somebody's got to be there for the children. So Maisa Shemeta Ishto Shel Yosef HaKohen. There was an instance where the wife of Yosef HaKohen passed away. He leans over to his ex-wife, meaning that wife who passed away, his sister, in the Beit HaKvarot, in the cemetery. Go ahead and take care of your sister's children. Despite the effect, he postponed consummating the marriage till after the period of time of what seems to be the Avilut. How long was that? So the Brayta that began, that Kol Shloshim Yom LeNisuin, 30 days before you're allowed to have Nisuin, so that stands even in the cases where we have the exceptions and have dispensations. Over here you have two dispensations. One dispensation is he has Mekayim Peru Revu. The second one is he has young children in the house. Both those cases he's allowed to marry immediately in order to take care of that situation, but the Bi'ilah, the ability to consummate the marriage, is postponed until after Yom Shloshim. So that means, seems to mean, even in the face of Peru Revu. I mean, obviously without Bia, there's no accomplishment of Peru Revu.
Right, so then what's the point of...
To line up, so that he has the marriage lined up. Right, so that he has the woman, he has the wife, he's married, and then after 30 days, he can immediately begin the process of Peru Revu. But you see here a number of items. Let's go through them. First of all, the restriction is only for 30 days. Because the Avelut for a wife is only for 30 days. I mean, you have Shiva and Shloshim, and after that it terminates. So Tosfot already recognizes that and says that after 30 days, a person should be completely permitted to marry. Yet we have two dayot in the Gemara. We have the day of the Tanakama, as well as the day of Rabbi Huda, that you have to wait either 3 regalim, or at minimum 2 regalim before you're allowed to get married. So Tosfot right away says that it's obviously lav dafka, because otherwise you would be mutar right after 30 days. This is nothing to do with Avelut. That's what Tosafot concludes. He says, over here you cannot conclude that the Loch is like Rabbi Yehuda, because we always paskin b'kidivrei ha-mekil ba-Avelut. He says, you can't say that over here, because it's clear this has nothing to do with Avelut. How do I know it has nothing to do with Avelut? The restrictions of Avelut would only let you not marry for 30 days. Yet here they're asking you to wait a much longer duration, whether it's 3 regalim or 2 regalim. So he says that, first of all, that must be independent of Avilut, and because of that, it's not subject to the rulings of Avilut, which is Kedivrei HaMekil. But then he goes on, and again, Tosafot, in a number of places in Shas, focuses on the psychological side here, and it's very interesting because, it's of course, way ahead of, in terms of the medical research and in terms of society as a whole, focusing on these psychological issues. Tosafot over here says the waiting of the 3 regalim is all psychological. And he says, number one, he says, why is this? Ad sheyesh shlosha regalim below simcha. That he will be for 3 regalim without happiness. Velo yishkach ahavat ishto. And he won't forget the love that he had for his first wife. We want him to take the time to recognize the loss, to understand the loss, to remember the love of his wife, and also for that time to pass, so that love also dissipates, meaning the natural course of the love leaving. Inami, kadesh yisa isha acheret, v'leya zachur min arishona. The problem of marrying a new woman and then having the other woman, quote unquote, present there, which is that if you don't give time for the person to separate from the previous marriage, if he marries immediately, then the Gemara in Ketubot, Gemara in Ketin describes this idea, then you have three people in the bed. Because you have the original wife, which he hasn't gotten over, the emotional loss, and now he has a new woman there, the question of separating between the new wife and the old wife. Again, a completely psychological issue. And then he has a third reason, which is penis kirena avati shtole kantara, that he might improperly use it as a wedge. He'll use it to provoke the new wife and say, oh, I remember what she did, I remember the love, and he can use it in a negative way on his new wife. So here, Tosafot says the Gemara is acknowledging the problem of marrying immediately. So fine, you are mutar after 30 days to get married. The Gemara wants you to wait longer, not because of avelut, but because of the real issues of getting married too fast. If you don't give time to separate to deal with the loss, then you're going to end up with problems here. The problems, and he names three of them here, of the psychological problems. First of all, the person has to acknowledge and give time for the loss to take effect and for a person to be mitmodeh to deal with the loss. If you don't give any time to deal with the loss, then you're never going to really have dealt with it, and that psychological baggage will be with the individual. And so it's important for him to feel the loss for the three regalim, and then only after that to get married. Number two is protection of the new wife. Protection of the new wife from two perspectives. One is if you marry too fast, the other wife's still going to be there in the room with them, which is a problem for the new wife, and as well as he could use it in a negative way to provoke or to instigate with the new wife. So we want time, we want separation. We don't want just this idea that loss and now marriage. The Gemara acknowledges that there's a practical problem as well. So the Gemara says that we don't give it a blanket isur, but we also acknowledge the practical side of it, which is pru revu, the idea of young children in the household. And again, in their day, especially pru revu, you had a time clock. People didn't live so long. So if you waited another year, that's significant in terms of their lifespans to wait in order to accomplish pru revu. The Gemara acknowledges these problems and says there are dispensations for these problems. But on the other hand, it talks about the broader issue and the psychological issues, which are important to acknowledge in these cases and to make that clear. So even in the case where they have the dispensation, the fact that there is a rule in place makes people aware of the issue and can help in terms of settling in the situation, even where you have to get married faster, at least acknowledge that these problems can arise and deal with those problems, or at least try to address those problems. So I think it's very interesting how Tosafot reads this Gemara. A woman has a separate issue. It's true by a woman, but a woman has a different issue. A woman has two issues, which is one is there is a demand that she wait 3 months in order to make sure that any child that is born, you have to give a gap to know who the father of the child is. So that's just a separate issue, nothing to do with avelut, nothing to do with psychological issues, it's a practical issue. How do we know that it's the child of the first or second husband? You need a gap of 3 months. So I say that's number one. Number two is, in their day, a woman who was not married and had already left her house was in a lot of trouble because of the ability to sustain the woman. A woman without a man in those days was very vulnerable. And not necessarily, I mean, if she had an estate and the money was left over, that's fine. But in a case where there was no estate, the woman had no way to support herself. And therefore, getting married was important because of her ability to sustain herself and her ability to be protected. So I think that that's another issue for women that does not apply necessarily to the man. And then, obviously, if she has little children, that's also exacerbated. Now, she may not have a mitzvah pru revu, so that may not be as important. She might biologically want to accomplish pru revu, but doesn't necessarily have a mitzvah pru revu. Again, with little children, she might have the same dynamic. I think there are balancing factors with a woman, but I don't think that they're necessarily different. The last thing to note here is that the case that the Gemara brings about Yosef HaKohen, which he says he leaned over to her during the funeral, basically, and says, you know, come be my wife. Tosfot over there says, lav dafka. Shavel kol shiva asur. There's no way that you can have nisuin within the first shiva, which is in the first 7 days. It's one thing to say that within shloshim you get married and you don't consummate the marriage. But during shiva, he says that is not possible that they got married at this point in time. So Tosfot's acknowledging that we can't take the story literally, but at least he's saying within Shloshim, even then when the period where normally Nisum is Asur, he took her as a wife and then only consummated the marriage after the 30-day period. Again, the Gemara is talking about a period much longer than the 30 days. And there, of course, you can have the dispensations kick in because it's not a problem of avilut. It's a psychological issue what the Gemara is dealing with, at least according to Tosafot. Alright, Tanu Rabbanan, Kol Shloshim Yom the Gihutz. For 30 days, one is restricted in Gihutz. Well, I'm going to loosely translate this as laundering, but we're going to see in a second that may not be the case. Echad Kelim Chadashim, Vechad Kelim Yishanim. Doesn't matter if it's new clothing or old clothing, the same restriction. If they are Yotzi Mitoch Amachbesh, if they're coming out, or either Mitachat, there are two different Girsot over here. Mitachat, it's a press. It's a heavy-duty press that they press down on the clothing to take out the creases and to make them new, in a sense. Equivalent of what we call dry cleaning today, I would suggest. So here, either mitoch machbeish, depends how it's set up. If it's set up on a horizontal basis, then you would say mitachat, because you'd lift up the cover. If it's set up on a vertical basis, then you could actually say mitoch, that you release it mitoch. So all of those are restricted. Rabbi Omer, lo asru ala kelim chadashim bilvad. Rabbi already qualifies that and said it's only true by new clothing, not by old clothing. Blazer Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo asru ala kelim chadashim livanim bilvad. Not only is it qualified by the fact that it's only new clothing, it's only new white clothing. So over here you see a differentiation, which is important here, a differentiation between the color of the clothing as well as the age of the clothing. New clothing, when you press it or when you launder it, can be returned to its original state. And because of that, it's problematic. The older clothing, the pressing and the laundering have very little impact on it, have little to improve the situation, and therefore would not be restricted. In addition to that, the pressing of the clothing or the creasing of the clothing by white has a significant impact because it's white. And therefore, the cleansing and the cleaning of the clothing makes it whiter and it's very obvious. Whereas by color clothing, it's not as obvious that the clothing is not clean or that the colors are not vibrant in that sense. So, therefore, the conclusion of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon is only new clothing that is white is problematic. That would be the conclusion you have from it. Rabbi at least acknowledges the difference between new and old clothing. But he adds on this addition of color. So, Abai Nafik, Abai went out, Begirdo de Sarvelo, Kirabi. As she says, Begirdo de Sarvelo is Mabush Lavan Miguhatz Yashan. He went out with a white clothing that was not new, it was an old piece of clothing, but it was Miguhatz. It was pressed, it was recleaned, and made like new, like Rabbi. Like Rabbi who says that, as long as it's not new, it is permissible. Rova nafik bichimutzta rumita sumkata charati. So let's go each word here. The chimutzta, Rashi says, is a chaluk, is his tunic. Rumita is from the word Roman, a Roman tunic. Sumkata is means red, but here it means colored. And charati means chadash, new. So he went out with a new colored garment. That was this Roman garment. That was his tunic. Like who? That's Kit, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. That's like Rabbi Elazar and Shimon who says that as long as it's not new and white, it is permissible. So he was wearing colored clothing. And so even though it was new, it was permissible. So he passed in like Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. As Tosafot points out, we have Machloket Abai and Rava. Halacha ke Rava. The fact that Rava supports Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon over here means that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. That the only problem here is new white clothing in terms of gihutz. Tosafot over here, there's a very large Tosafot, you can see it. The Gemara in the Bavli deals with this with regards to Tisha B'Av as well. That what exactly is restricted over here? The fact that the Gemara uses the term gihutz already opens up this problem that maybe there's something called kibus and something called gihutz. Basically, I would term it today the difference between laundering and dry cleaning. Kibus might be laundering. Gihutz would be pressing it, getting it dry cleaned. So maybe the restriction here is only on gihutz, not on kibus. And that's what the Gemara in the Bavli discusses. The Gemara in the Bavli says that in Bavel, Hareya gihutz shalanu. Our gihutz is like kibush shalahem. It's like the laundering of Eretz Yisrael. So in Eretz Yisrael, they clearly had two tiers, which was this kibush, which was this laundering, and then this gihutz. And in Bavel, they said, we don't have that differentiation because our gihutz is no better than the laundering in Eretz Yisrael. So they clearly acknowledge that there's a difference here. But once you do that, that already opens up the possibility that the restriction here is only against gihutz, and that means that kibush would be totally mutar. It's brought down halacha in the halachot of the 9 days or Shavuot Shechalbo. Exactly this differentiation, that the difference between gihutz and kibus, which would imply that our gihutz, that's what they say in Bavel and Chutz Laaretz, is like the kibus of Eretz Yisrael, would be mutar. And that would be the same thing you would suggest over here, that kibus would be mutar. So Tosafot grapples with this idea that maybe kibus is mutar, He, at one point, he brings different dayot. One dayot that gihutz and kibbutz are synonymous, and therefore there really is no difference. Another possibility that there's a difference between laundering with just water versus laundering with detergents. And maybe that's the difference between kibbutz and gihutz, and maybe that would be what we would differentiate. As well as the possibility that we would differentiate between avelut and Tisha B'Av, or the 9 days. That by the 9 days, there may be different restrictions than you have by avelut. Part of that might have to do with laundering for use afterwards. Whereas by the 9 days, we say you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to launder even for use afterwards. You can't wear laundered clothing, and you can't launder for afterwards. So there we say the reason is, new clothing is a problem of simcha, the pleasure, and the laundering for afterwards is a problem of hesachadat. We want you focused on avelut. So it's interesting that he wants to differentiate in avelut, because the same thing should apply here. I mean that wearing it is a problem of the pleasure, and laundering is a problem of hesachadat. So it's interesting that Tosfa would even consider that differentiation between avelut and Tisha B'Av. In the end, he says that we are machmir, and that's what he says in the end, that our minog is to be machmir, and to worry about any type of kibbutz. Tisha B'Av machrim ha'olam b'kibbutz shelanu mitoch ha-minhag. He says, because of the minhag, even by the 9 days, we had disallowed kibbutz. K'mo she'achmiru li'inyan avelut, debasar meliach. Same thing by avelut, even though the only restriction against eating meat is meat that is ra'oi to go on the mizbeach, and therefore salted meat would not be under that restriction. So he says, "Shari ba'locha v'rgin le'og bo isur." We don't eat meat at all. Umiyo enu mevin minayin lo lahakel b'tisha b'av yoter mimei evlo. He says, the only thing I don't understand is why you would make such a differentiation between Tisha B'Av and Avelut, which is what I just spoke about here. Doesn't seem to be that Avelut and Tisha B'Av should have that distinction. He talks about it more. But you should be aware of the fact that within halacha, it would seem to be that it's not so obvious that one cannot launder. And the question of what that laundering means. I mean, does that mean simply just rinse it in water to wash it out? Does that mean even with detergents, because it's not gihutz? Whatever that means. But mi'ikar halacha, those would be mutar. Our minhag is, and that's the practice that we have today, is that we disallow any of these items. We don't launder whatsoever. We don't wash whatsoever. None of these things are permitted. You can understand why. Generally, the way that the chachamim work, when we have restrictions, is we try to make them as objective as possible. What you don't want is people saying, yeah, I laundered it, but I didn't do gihutz. You don't want people playing around with the mitzvah. That's number one. Number two is, if you say that only gihutz is asur and kibbutz is mutar, but we don't have gihutz anymore, I mean, that's what the Gemara basically says, then you've almost eliminated the whole law completely. That means that there's no restriction against laundering anymore, and you've lost the law entirely. And I think that we were reluctant to do that. So therefore, the minhag is to make kibbutz like gihutz and not do it at all. So again, that affects our practices, both now and during the 9 days. But mi'ikar halacha, it's very possible, like we paskin here, like Rava would paskin like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, that it would only apply to new white clothing. We apply it to all clothing. We apply it to color clothing, old clothing, and so on and so forth. That's all has to do with the minhag. As part of that, I should make a point here. Tosfot also notes, he says, well, all this discussion here with our gihutz doesn't really exist in Chutzlaritz, in Bavel. He says, wait a minute, that the Gemara here is talking about Abai and Rava, who are residents of Bavel, and they're discussing gihutz over here. Why are they discussing gihutz if the Gemara believes that gihutz in Bavel doesn't really exist? It's like the kibbutz of Eretz Yisrael. So that's one of his proofs that maybe kibbutz and gihutz are not so different. But in the end, he says that the Re suggested that they used to have experts come from Eretz Yisrael out to Bavel, so they imported the know-how from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. So there were people who were available to do the gihutz in Bavel like they did in Eretz Yisrael, but they had to be trained and they had to come from Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't the natural order in Bavel, but there were people who could do it. They could do gihutz like Eretz Yisrael, which would make it like the gihutz of Eretz Yisrael, and that's why Abai and Rava are discussing this issue at all, even though they're found in Bavel. Next piece of the Gemara is, Mipnei Shamaru Shabbat Ula Veinam Afseket. Shabbat counts towards the Avelut, and it does not interrupt it. So now, Bnei Yehuda or Bnei Gilila. So you have Bnei Yehuda, Bnei Gilila. These are different areas within Eretz Yisrael. We find within the Gemara, or within the Mishnah, different practices in the north and the Bnei Gilila versus the people in the south of Bnei Yehuda. Comes up in the Gemara and Ketubot and other places. So over here too, Hani Amrei. Yesh avelut b'Shabbat, v'hamei amrei ein avelut b'Shabbat. They have a fundamental machloket as to whether there is avelut on Shabbat or there is no avelut on Shabbat. Tosafot already says over here, when you say yesh avelut b'Shabbat, it doesn't mean full throttle avelut, it means b'dvarim shebetzinah mari. We're talking about things that are in private matters where you can keep them on Shabbat without it being an issue of ruining the spirit of Shabbat. So do they have avelut on Shabbat or do they not have that on Shabbat? What is called b'tzinah? Tosafot over here says, Hishivlo bebeito chashiv tzina. Anything you do in your house is called bitzina. So that's an interesting concept, meaning that if you wear your shoes out in public, maybe you have to take your shoes off when you're in the house, because that's already considered to be bitzina. The question of what tzina means, how many people are in the house, all these things matter in terms of determining what's called tzina on Shabbat or not tzina, or maybe tzina means anything that nobody else knows about. So maybe like Tashmisha Mitah, where that nobody would know about it, so therefore Avelut is, it's subject to the rules of Avelut because nobody will ever know. And that's why it's called Bitzina. But anything that somebody will know about or become obvious to other people, maybe that's not called Bitzina. Tell us what over here defines Tzina as being anything that's in the house. So now, here's their machloket. Alright, the question that you bring up is, how can we say Amalka Minachem Etchem on Friday night in Kabbalat Shabbat when the Avelim are coming in? Because it makes it into a Befarhesi issue on Shabbat. I've been discussing this with many shuls and trying to change the practice in many shuls. Let me tell you what I think originally happened, and then I'll tell you what the problem with our practice is. What I think originally happened, there is a machloket amongst the poskim. When does Kabbalat Shabbat really happen? When do you accept Shabbat to the point where through davening you've accepted Shabbat? So there's three different dayot as to when you accept Shabbat. One day is Baruch Hu, when you say the Baruch Hu by Ma'ariv. Another day is by Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat. The third day is at the end of Boi B'Shalom, at the end of L'cha Dodi. That's where the three different possibilities of when one accepts Shabbat. That's number one. Number two is, in their day, they daven Kabbalat Shabbat significantly before Shkiyah. They did not daven Kabbalat Shabbat like we did going into Shkiyah. They daven Mincha right into Shkiyah, and Kabbalat Shabbat starts like a minute before Shkiyah. Their Kabbalat Shabbat was probably finished before Shkiyah. Many times they were davening Ma'arif prior to Shkiyah, because in Europe, where they were living, the sun was setting extremely late, and they talk about the problems of not davening Ma'ariv earlier, or davening Ma'ariv before Shkiyah, which is dealt with in the first daf in Brachot. You see the Baal HaTosfot, all the Rishonim are dealing with this issue in Europe. So it's clear that they're davening way before the Shkiyah. Because of that, because they're davening so far before the Shkiyah, then Kabbalat Shabbat, you're only accepting the Shabbat, either again, whether it's Boi B'Shalom, Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, or Baruch Hu. So the issue is not an issue, because you do the Malka Menachem Etchem at least before two of the dayot as to when you're Mekabel Shabbat, and maybe even before the third dayah, which is the practice to turn around during Boi B'Shalom might have actually come from this issue, that they moved the Malka Menachem Etchem was actually prior to the last paragraph in the Chadudi. They turned around to greet the Avilim to come in, and then they accepted the Shabbat coming in. That might be the origins of the practice, and you can find in some of the older Sidurim that a Malka Minachem was actually found before that last paragraph in L'cha Dodi. So in terms of the origins of the practice, your question doesn't exist because they did it prior to the Kabbalat Shabbat. The problem is, in our day, what goes on is significantly problematic for a number of reasons. One is, the Gemara in Shabbat says, Machloka Beit Hillel Beit Shabbai, and there it says, Bekoshi Hitiru Nichum Avelim B'Shabbat. That they didn't really want to allow Nichum Avelim on Shabbat, Bekoshi, they allowed it, because they didn't want it to be a steer on Shabbat. But there is Nichum Avelim on Shabbat, but we do it in a differentiated manner. That is true by Bikur Cholim as well. Bikur Cholim, we don't do in the normal way. We don't say Refuah Shleima on Shabbat. We say Shabbat Yimi Lezok, Refuah Krova Levo. We change it. The Gemara says the same thing about Bikur Cholim. Bikoshi Yitiro Bikur Cholim B'Shabbat. They were worried about it undermining the spirit of Shabbat. So you say it in a different way. The same is true by Nichum Avelim. To say the normal Amakom Yinachem Etchem Etoch Shar V'Yisroel V'Shulayim is not as clear that you're supposed to do it. You can't do that. There is an alternative Lashon, similar to what you have by the case of Bikur Cholim, which instead of saying Refuah Shleima, you say Shabbat Himel Lezok U'Refuah Krova Levo. There's also a Lashon brought down of Shabbat Himel Anachem U'Nechama Krova Levo. So that would be one way to deal with, at least part of the problem is, that the Nichum Avelim that's done on Shabbat should be differentiated from Nichum Avelim that is done during the week. Saying Amakom Yinachem Etchem is probably inappropriate on Shabbat. That's one way to deal with it. I've seen others that say that they quote a Pasuk in Yishayahu instead of saying Amakom Yinachem Etchem, they read the Pesukim as if they're Pesukim instead of saying Amakom Yinachem Etchem in order to avoid that problem. But clearly, that's one issue where you should change the Lashon. The second issue, which you're completely correct about, is you've just done exactly the opposite of what you want, which is, here you wanted to make it that they come in before the Shabbat. The Nichum Avelim is completed before Shabbat, and then they come into Shabbat, and therefore there's no public Avelut on Shabbat. By turning around and doing the Nichum Avelim in our practice day, where Kabbalat Shabbat is done into Shkiyah, Shkiyah by Avelim automatically brings in Shabbat. It's no longer you have to accept it. Shkiyah makes it Shabbat. So now, if you're doing Nikum HaMeimim in that case, you're actually making a public display of Avelut on the Shabbat itself, which is a significant problem. That's aside from the issue of doing Nikum HaMeimim in a different way. It's a separate issue simply of not doing it in public on Shabbat. So because of that, either one of two things has to happen. One is that you have to move up the Nikum HaMeimim earlier, which you mentioned that maybe in some of shuls, they had that practice to move Nikum HaMeimim before Kabbalat Shabbat. It should be before Shkia. Nichum Avelim should be accomplished before Shkia, before the onset of Shabbat. There's no question about it. And if it means that you do it before Kabbalat Shabbat, it makes sense to leave it in place when what is happening in place is just not true anymore. I mean, that when they had it in place, that Kabbalat Shabbat was before Shkia. That's just not true anymore. You got to move the Nichum Avelim up. Should do it right before Kabbalat Shabbat. They should greet the Avelim, and that's it. And number two is, even if you're going to do it, you have to do it in a differentiated manner. And again, I still think in the differentiated manner, you still have this problem of Befehesir versus Bitsina, and I think it is problematic. Many shuls that I've attended over the years tried to encourage changes. It's an emotional issue, like anything else in Avelut, and it's very hard to get people are not so willing to change in these manners, even though it's clearly wrong, and it's clearly incorrect. And even Rabbanim have told me they've tried, and they were not successful at changing it, and people have strong emotions about changing that practice. But I see in certain places in the Shul HaDamim now, they change to what they say. They don't change the location. I'm still working on getting them to change when they do it, so that's not after Shkia, because it is a significant problem. And you are correct about that, and it is an issue based on this, that there is no Avelut Befehesir on Shabbat, and it really needs to be addressed in the shuls in general. So now, Manda Amar Yesh Avelut B'Shabbat, the one who says there is Avelut B'Shabbat, Diktani Ola, it counts towards Avelut. So if it counts towards Avelut, the only way you can count it towards Avelut is if there is Avelut. It doesn't interrupt it. Well, why would you have to tell me it doesn't interrupt it if you're acting like there is Avelut over here? So, if you think there is Avelut b'Shabbat, then if you're keeping Avelut on Shabbat, then why would you even think that it doesn't count towards, or that it interrupts the Avelut? There's no havamina to say that if you're keeping Avelut on Shabbat. Now, Tosafot over here, I'm not going to go into the Tosafot, says that he thinks that their opinions are not necessarily like we suggested before, whether it's Betzina or not Betzina, but it really is full throttle. Is there Avelut, full throttle Avelut? That's their argument. Or is there no Avelut whatsoever? And that's the nature of their machloket over here. It's based on the Mishnah, if you read it literally. Are we talking about a case where there's full Avelut on Shabbat? Are we talking about a case where there is no Avelut whatsoever on Shabbat? The focus is which side of the statement you focus on. Do you focus on the Ola or the Mafseket side of it, and that will determine which way you're going to lean. But then each one of them has to deal with the other part of the statement, and that's what the Gemara is going to ask now. If I hold this, what do I do with the other half of the statement? Because by Yom Tov, where it says, because of that, that's why by Shabbat they kept a parallel structure. So therefore, Tana Reisha Ola. So he says, basically, that it's Lav Dafka. One of those two statements is lav dafka. He says that the dafka statement is the lo mafsikin. It doesn't interrupt over here. What's dafka about that? That means that if it's not mafsik, that means that you're not doing the normal practices of Avelut. Avelut must be suspended on Shabbat, and that's why it says lafsik. What about the fact it says ola, that it counts towards Avelut? No problem. That's just lav dafka. That's to keep the parallel structure in the Mishnah between Yom Tov and Shabbat. According to one who says Avelut on Shabbat, he uses Olah to prove to you that it is Avelut on Shabbat. So what does he do with the part that Einam Afseket? It's a good claim. You say Einam Afseket, sounds like something's different on Shabbat. So he does the same thing. He says that's to deal with the parallel structure of Yom Tov in the latter half of the Mishnah. So each one of them focuses on one aspect of Shabbat being Dafka, and the other one being for the parallel structure. Just depends which one you pick. If you pick Olah, that indicates that you have full-fledged Avelut. If I can focus on Einam Afseket, that sounds like you have no Avelut whatsoever. What's interesting here is that the Gemara suggests that there would be a difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov, which is that, even according to the Mandamer here, that Shabbat is no Avelut, nevertheless, it will count towards the Avelut. Whereas by Yom Tov, where there's no Avelut, it doesn't count towards it. And those would ask the basic question, why? Why should there be a distinction between Yom Tov and Shabbat if both of them do not have Nikuge Avelut? Tosfot's answer is even more surprising because Tosfot doesn't hold like this. Tosfot says that on Shabbat you keep Dvarim Shibitzina, so there is a manifestation of Avelut on Shabbat, and that's why it counts towards the 7 days. Yom Tov, there is no Nikuge Avelut at all. It's against the Simcha of Yom Tov. There's a difference between Oneg Shabbat and Simchat Yom Tov. Simchat Yom Tov completely wipes out Avelut. They cannot coexist, Avelut and the Simcha of the Regel. And therefore, Avelut is gone, the Gamrei. And that's why it doesn't count towards Avelut, and that's why it's Mafsik. On the other hand, Shabbat, where you still do the things, Devarim Shebit Sina, and there's only a requirement of Oneg Shabbat, not Simchat HaShabbat, over there we can reconcile between the two. Since we can reconcile between the two, it counts towards the Minyan Shiva, and it's not Mafsik. That's Tosafot's answer. That answer works really well for the Rambam. The Rambam says that when it comes to Yom Tov, there are no practices of Avelut whatsoever. Zero practices. You have no practice of Avelut whatsoever. On Shabbat, you have Dvarim Shebit Sina. That distinction is then clear, and what Tosafot says is true. The problem is, Tosafot, later on in the Masechta, you already said it back on Daf Yud Tet Amud Bet as well, says that even on Yom Tov, we keep Dvarim Shebit Sina, which is the Minhag Ashkenaz, is that the Ashkenazim keep Dvarim Shebit Sina on Yom Tov. And on the Tosafot, on our Daf, Tosafot suggests, according to the one who says, Ein Avelut b'Shabbat, there is no Avelut whatsoever, just like there's no Avelut whatsoever on Yom Tov. Once you do that, then there's no difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov. That's the case, Tosafot's answer goes away, which is, what is the difference then between Shabbat and Yom Tov? What you have to argue in the end is that despite the fact that we keep Devarim Shebit Sina on Yom Tov versus Devarim Shebit Sina on Shabbat are different. The reason we keep Devarim Shebit Sina on Shabbat is because Avelut can happen on Shabbat. Since it can happen on Shabbat, that's why we keep Devarim Shebit Sina. On Yom Tov, where Avelut can't happen on Yom Tov, we keep Devarim Shebit Sina because the person still is an Avel. And even if you say that the Yom Tov ends the Shiva, or even if you say that the person has a Niftar on Yom Tov itself, and they're not going to start the practice of Avelut afterwards, there's still the emotional aspect, there's still the reality of the person being an Avel on those days. And because of that, the Devarim Shebit Sina are a way to have that emotion manifest itself, but not necessarily be Avelut, in the real sense of Avelut. And that's what you're going to have to argue for the Balei HaTosafot. But it's interesting that Tosafot makes the distinction here, something that he doesn't hold of, both we saw back on Yud Tet, and we're going to see again later on the Masechta, that he thinks that you do keep Devarim Shebit Sina, even on Yom Tov. Now, the Gemara suggests here that this should be similar to another Machloket Tanaim, which is, Mi Shemeto Mutal Lefanav. Person has a mate that's there, waiting to bury the mate. The mate's with them in the house. Not like today, where they moved it over to the burial society, where they moved it over to the Chever Kaddish, or it's by the funeral home. The mate was with you in the house. And when you're talking about doing a Tara, that was done in the house, the water, everything was done there. The mate is proximate with the family. Until you buried it, the mate was there, literally, in the house or with the family. So, Mi Shemeto Mutal Lefanav, Ochel B'Bayit Acher. You should eat in another house. Ain't no bait acher, if he doesn't have another place to eat. Ochel b'bayit chaveiro. Should go to his friend's house at least. Ain't no bait chaveiro, if he doesn't have a friend to go to. Osel mechitza sarat fachim. He should put up a mechitza between him and the mate and not eat with the mate's there. Ain't no davar lasod mechitza. If he has nothing to make a mechitza, makzir panav ochel. He should turn away and eat, not facing the mate. Veinu may save veochel. He shouldn't do a normal type of eating, which is that they lay down on the sofa and do haseba. Veinu chol basar, veinu shetayayin. He's not allowed to eat meat. He's not allowed to drink wine. Veinu mevarech, he's not allowed to make a bracha, veinu mezamein, he can't make a zimun, vein mevarchim elav, vein mezamein elav, and they can't make a bracha on him, and they can't be mezamein with him. Rashi over here claims that ein mevarchim is hamotzi, ein mezamein is birkat hamazon. Tosafot rejects it and says, what does it mean that mevarchim elav? Hamotzi is not something you make for someone else. Mevarchim elav makes it sound like there's some sort of participatory joint effort over here. And there Tosafot says they're both talking about zimun. One is saying that you don't make a zimun together. The other one is that we force you to split up. Similar to by Tisha B'Av, by the Suda Mafseket, we tell you don't eat together so that you should not become obligated in a mezumun. So that, number one is you don't do a mezumun, you don't include them in the zimun, but number two is when you don't eat together so there won't be even an obligation of zimun. Upatur mikriyat shema u'minetfilah u'minetfilin. He's patur from kriyat shema, tefillin, and tefillin. All those he does not do here. Umikola mitzvot amurot b'Torah. And all other mitzvot in the Torah, I'm not going to get into this, is really subject to the Gemara and Brachot, whether this girsa exists. We have other girsot that don't have it. Whether the exemption of meito shemutal lefanav is only about kriyat shema tefillah and tefillin, or does it extend to all other mitzvot of Torah? Here we clearly have in the Braita, we call it mitzvot of Torah. There is some question about the girsot. Ubi Shabbat. What happens on Shabbat? May save ve'ochel. He lays down, eats like normal. Ve'ochel basar v'shotei yayin. Eats meat, drinks wine. Umevareich umezamein. Brachot, zimun. Umevarchin mezamein alav. And he joins other people's. V'chayav b'kriyat shema tefillah tefillin. He's chayav in all these items. U'b'chol mitzvot amurot b'Torah, and all mitzvot in the Torah. Rabban Gamliel omer, mitok sh'nitchayev b'elu, nitchayev b'kulan. Since he's chayav in these, he should be chayav in all of these things. tefillin on Shabbos, right? So whether it's according to the opinion who says there is tefillin on Shabbat, or the three come together. It's Kriya Shema, tefillin, so it all comes in one package, so they mention it together. So now what the Gemara is suggesting over here is saying that this machloket that we have over here should be similar machloket to what we have above. Now, Rabbi Gamliel seems to say that because you're chayiv in these, you're chayiv in everything. Wait a minute, that's what the Tanna Kamma said as well. He just said you're chayiv in kol mitzvot amur el b'Torah. What's different between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Gamliel? The answer is, Amar Yochanan Tashmisha Mita Ikebenayu. The machloket is whether the Isra of Tashmisha Mita applies. So basically, this is a Dover Shebitzin'ah. Does a Dover Shebitzin'ah apply by Meitu Mutalafanav? On Shabbat, where you have the mate there, Meitu Mutalafanav. Well, Tanna Kamma says, you're chayav in all mitzvot Torah. Gamliel says, because you're chayav in Izeilu, and it's chayav in Kulan, you're chayav in all of them. They both seem to be saying the same thing, you're chayav in all mitzvot. So Rabbi Yochanan says, the difference between them is Tashmisha Mita. My love, hakam iflegei. This is their machloket. Mar saver yesh avilut b'Shabbat, that there is avilut b'tzina on Shabbat. Mar saver ein avilut b'Shabbat. There is no avilut on Shabbat. So here they're suggesting that the machloket between them is whether there is or not avilut on Shabbat b'tzina. Shmisha mita. Is it suspended on Shabbat or not suspended? Mimai, how do you say that? Dumad kam lo kamar tana kama haltam elav shum de meto mutalafanav. Maybe there the Tana Kamma says that meto mutalafanav, therefore it's inappropriate. It's not right to do Tashmisha Mita of a Hocha, the Emutal Mufanav, lo. But maybe over here with Meitu Emutalafanav, maybe fine Tashmisha Mita. Vadla and Kano Kamaragan Hotam, the Katilo Chalavi Lutale. Maybe over there he can have Tashmisha Mita because he's not yet an Avel. Aval Hocha, the Chalavi Lutale, Hochanami, here where the Avelut already devolved upon him. Once he's already an Avel and it comes to Shabbat, we're not going to suspend the Avelut in the middle. Over there, the Avelut didn't start. So therefore Tashmisha Mita is Mutar. Here, once the Avelut starts, we're not going to, like, suspend it in the middle and say no. So Gemara says, you don't, can't necessarily say these two are parallel. So now, what I want to talk about here, Tosafot raises the issue already. This turns out to be a major machloket Rishonim, which is, it's clear from the Gemara over here, we have all these restrictions. You're not allowed to eat meat, not allowed to drink wine, you have all these restrictions, which do not apply to Avelut. An Avel is Mutar b'Basar, and Avel is Mutar b'Yayin. The Gemara in Brachot talks about they used to have the Brachot ala kosot of Yayin. They stopped it because the Avelim were getting drunk. The Gemara originally says you drink wine, drink avilut, is to drown out your sorrows. Problem was that people were doing more than drowning out their sorrows. They were becoming completely drunk and became inappropriate. So they stopped the brachot ala kosot. They stopped the wine drinking. But technically an avel is mutar b'basar, mutar b'yayin. And beyond that, he might even be mutar b'shechiyanu. There may not be any restriction against an avel making the bracha of shechiyanu. When it comes to the 3 weeks, the Ramah brings down the practice that we don't make Shechiyanu during the 3 weeks, just like you don't make a Shechiyanu during Avelut. One of the Gra's criticisms of the Ramah is, where do you ever find that an Avel may not make a Shechiyanu? There's no such concept. If you have a new fruit, and Avel gets a new fruit during his Avelut, you would say Shechiyanu. Where do you ever see that there's a the Avel is precluded from saying Shechiyanu? So why do you say the Minhag is like that here? We bridge the two and say that if you have to make a Shechiyanu, make it on Shabbat, not during the weekday. But technically, according to the Gra, you can make Shechiyanu anytime, because Avelut is not in dissonance with the Shechiyanu. Now, what you have here are all these practices that don't necessarily apply to Avelut. And yet, we also have practices by Avelut that don't apply over here. What Tosafot points out is that we're dealing with two different issues. We're dealing with one issue, which is Meitom Mutalafanav, and another issue, which is Avelut. And the two have different reasons, and because of that differentiation, they have different manifestations of the mitzvot. Meitom Mutalafanav is an issue of, we want him to be mitapo b'mate. We want you to deal with the mate. We don't want you getting involved in other things. If you get involved in other things, it's going to take you away from dealing with the mate, and that would be inappropriate. So we say to you, deal with the mate, and don't deal with these other issues. So we suspend your ability to deal with all these other issues, or do all the other things. That includes, he says over here, meisei v'ochel. We don't want you to laying down and eating. That's an extended meal. That's a long meal when you do haiseba. Basar v'yayin. That's a big meal. You eat a lot of basar v'yayin, the guy's going to get tired, you're getting drunk. And these are all things that take you away from the mate. We say, don't eat so much. Don't eat all that you have to. And that all these things are done to facilitate your ability to deal with the mate. So then Tosafot says, what happens if you're not dealing with the mate? Like, for instance, on Shabbat, which happens over here. That's why you don't have all these restrictions, number one. Number two is, what happens if someone else is taking care of the mate? Then are you freed from this? So Tosafot over here suggests that maybe even if that's the case, there's still an issue of kavura mate. That you shouldn't distract yourself from the mate. Even if you're not the one taking care of him immediately and there's no immediate need, maybe there's an issue of distraction. It says, number one, that's the issue of mate mutalafanav. Avelut is a completely different issue. Avelut has to do with, again, it's covered on mate, but there it is that the person is a simcha, that he can't have things that make him happy. He can't be involved in things that are still simcha. And he also has to demonstrate or display a certain amount of grieving for the mate. And so those two issues are different. And therefore, he would say, in the sense that aninut and avilut are two different things. The truth is, and I mentioned this before earlier in the Gemara, I heard this from Meir Lichtenstein, but it's true in the Gemara. We mix them up, but there are three different stages, three different issues here. The Gemara in Brachot, which is the main Gemara that deals with it, is there's an issue of meitum mutalafanav. But meitum mutalafanav, there are certain requirements, and we see over here, certain restrictions and certain things that are, you are patur, you're exempted from. There's another period of time called aninut. Aninut is that immediate time after the mate is niftar, before you bring closure to it, before the burial. Whether that lasts only for the first day, midoraita, afterwards midorabanan, or even for the first day and night, midoraita, that's aninut. Then there's a third category called avilut. Avilut is after nistama golel, after the time of the burial, there's avilut. You have three things, meitom mutalafanav, aninut, and avilut. The question that Rishonim are dealing with is, what is the interplay between them and the overlap between them? How does aninut interplay with avilut? How does aninut interplay with meitom mutalafanav? How does meitom mutalafanav deal with avilut? Meaning that you have these three time periods and they overlap. It's clear that they overlap. A person's an onain when his meito is mutalafanav. But a person might be an onain even when his meito is not mutalafanav. A person can be an onain and then an avel while he's an onain, because when does the avilut start? This is a massive machlok of the Rishonim. The way the Rambam phrases it is that aninut and avilut are completely separate. Avilut only starts once aninut is gone. Avilut begins at the termination of aninut. That's the crossover over here. That's why none of the practices of avilut apply to an onain. Onain doesn't have any of these practices. He's not restricted by all these things that we have by avilut, because avilut only starts after the burial. Before that, it's all aninut. So don't confuse the two. That's what the Rambam says. The Ramban says it's very problematic, because we know that most of the Rishonim, including the Rambam, believe that the first day of avilut is Doraita. You know how they learned that out? They learned that out from aninut. So how does he learn it out of aninut if avilut only starts after the aninut has ceased? After the aninut has ceased and then the avilut begins, how can you connect between the two? So the Ramban believes the other way. He says your avilut starts right away. Avilut starts from the time the person is niftar. Avilut and aninut are happening simultaneously. So then why am I not doing the practices of avilut? Meitom mutalafanav. Meitom mutalafanav suspends the nihugei avilut so you can deal with the mate. So meitom mutalafanav postpones avilut to later. But avilut and aninut really happen at the same time. So he says, that's how I explain why, if aninut is doraita, avilut is doraita, because they happen simultaneously. But I have the dispensation of meitom mutalafanav. Again, it's very important because of these overlaps between them, whether avilut has started, not started. Does aninut start? It has nafkaminut. Again, in the cases where you're not being metapol b'mate, you're not dealing with the mate, then do you have avilut then? Or only aninut? And what are the implications? Do you have turima meitom mutalafanav, or don't have turima meitom mutalafanav? All the Rishonim are dealing with those three areas and the overlap between them and how they interact between them. Their shitot are to develop a way to reconcile between the halachot and the differentiation between each of them, and how do we see that differentiation? Again, I said to you, the Rambam says aninut and avilut are completely separate. The Ramban believes that they're parallel, but you have the meitom mutalafanav that gives you a ptur from the avilut, and that's why you don't see avilut and aninut at the same time, even though technically they're there at the same time. So Tosfot himself is dealing with that, and he says that there is a differentiation over here. He says that we see that there are differences between aninut and avilut. Devarim sheim mishum avel mutar gabi onein ubavilut asurim. So he says that certain things by avilut are asur, but by onein are totally mutar. Aval devarim sheinam asurim mishum avilut el mishum sheish liot taru bikvarut meito. Right, these are things not because of avilut, but because he's involved in bearing his mate. And that's why here, by aninut, he has certain restrictions that don't apply by avilut. Basar v'yayin is so that he's metapo b'mate. So that's why by avilut it's not an issue, but by onein it is an issue. So you see him actually, by the way, he's saying aninut and meitom mutalafanav, he's putting them together as one category and saying, aninut, the restrictions of aninut are because of meitom mutalafanav. And that's why the aninut requires you not to drink wine, not to eat basar. By avilut you don't have that restriction. So you see, Tosafot saying that aninut and meitom mutalafanav are joined at the hip, and avilut is completely separate, similar to the Rambam. Right? So again, you have to deal with that issue of why aninut and avilut have different dinim, and how does meitom mutalafanav interact with that. So the way the Ramban learns it, meitom mutalafanav is a ptur from avilut, whereas over here, Tosafot and Rambam seem to say that meitom mutalafanav is what drives the restrictions of aninut, and that's why you have these restrictions. And it's important to distinguish, because we just read a list of items that don't apply by avilut, only apply by aninut. Tosafot over here also mention something that's very important, but the Shita Meito Mutalofnav, the Torah Meito Mutalofnav. We discussed this in the Gemara in Brachot, it's Machloket Rashi and Tosafot there, and as Meito Nafkamino actually today, which is that from Rashi it sounds like Meito Mutalofnav is a dispensation. You are patur if you take up the dispensation. But if you choose to opt into the mitzvot, then you would be allowed to do the mitzvah. Like, there are certain things where it doesn't take any time. Why can't you make a bracha b'motzi? Why can't you bench? It doesn't take up too much time. It doesn't distract you from meito mutalafanav. Tosafot over here argues, and he does in the Gemara in Brachot, and says that's not true. When we say you're patur min ha-mitzvot, it means you can't opt in. You're patur the gamre from the mitzvot. That difference might have to do with the way they view meito mutalafanav. Rashi sees meito mutalafanav as a tour so that you can deal with the mate. So if something doesn't take you away from the mate, then you should be able to do it. Or if the mate's being taken care of by someone else, then you should be able to do or be chayav in all the mitzvot because you don't have the dispensation. On the other hand, Tosafot says that meito mutalafanav is a tour even if you're not being metapel b'mate, meaning that you're not allowed to be opt-in here. Why is that? So that could be one of two reasons. He thinks, as we just said before, that aninut, the dinim of aninut are driven by meito mutalafanav. But once the dinim of aninut are put in place, as an onin, you have these laws. You're patur. Even if meito mutalafanav is not relevant. Number two is, he might see the patur of meito mutalafanav as an inyan of kavoda mate, not just being mitapel mate. Not just because you have to deal with the mate, we don't want you distracted. It's also improper for you to be mesiach dat from the mate. Because for you to take your mind off of the mate is this huge issue, meaning that we want you focused on the mate. It's inappropriate for you to be doing other things, including mitzvot, and take your mind off the mate. And therefore you're patur, even if you're not physically or actually dealing with the issues of the mate, you shouldn't be distracted at all, and therefore the patur will exist. Again, today this has huge implications in terms of cases where the funeral home is taking care of all the arrangements. Or over Yom Tov, or over Shabbat, that period of time when you can't be metabol mamate. Do you have the turim of meito mutalafanav? That is a major machloket, and it's based on this difference in the Rashi and the Tosafot. It especially comes up with mitzvot, where it takes almost no time to do them, including counting the Omer. If one is not count the Omer because he's an Onain, then he'll lose out the whole ability to count the Omer for the rest of the Omer, possibly, because of 1 second it would take to count the Omer. So why can't he count the Omer? What's the big deal? Let him count the Omer. It won't take him away from the mate. So that might have to do with this differentiation. Is it simply about not taking yourself away from dealing with the mate? So saying the Omer wouldn't be a big deal. Or is it an issue of aninut, and it's an issue of kavod mate, and therefore it's inappropriate whether it takes you away from the mate or not, for how long? Or maybe even according to that day of, it doesn't take up any time, then it's mutar legamre. So these questions are discussed in the Achronim and La Alocha. There are different minhagim and different piskei alocha, so one should check with the Rav in any of these types of situations. Okay, by me, Rabbi Yochanan Mishmol, yesh avelut b'shabbat, or ein avelut b'shabbat, what's the din? Amalei, ein avelut b'shabbat. There is no avelut on Shabbat. So here you see Tosfot says, miu Rabbi Yochanan lo kibel mishmuel. Yochanan doesn't accept the position of Shmuel. Diu sfirlei dvarim shebitzina noheg. He believes that dvarim shebitzina are noheg. So even though he says ein avelut b'shabbat, means ein avelut gamrei b'shabbat, and he does not accept Shmuel's position. Rabbi Yochanan himself paskins there is avelut b'shabbat, meaning that there are dvarim shebitzina b'shabbat, which is our practice, that dvarim shebitzina do apply on Shabbat.
So when they say yesh avelut,
Tosfot originally reads that yesh avelut b'shabbat means dvarim shebitzina. But then in another Tosfot, he speculates that the opinion that says Yesh Avilut B'Shabbat means full-fledged Avilut B'Shabbat. And when they say Yesh Avilut B'Shabbat, it's no different than Friday. Avilut B'Shabbat means that just like you did it on Friday, you're going to continue on Shabbat. And that's why you say it's Oleh L'Minyan Shiva. But if it was different, why would you not say that it's in Oleh L'Minyan Shiva? Like, the way we have it, we do Dvarim Shebitzinah, you can understand the Mishnah. It's Olah, Ve'en Mafsek. It's Olah because you do Dvarim Shebitzinah, and Mafsek because even though you're not doing the full-fledged Avilut. But Tosfot says, if you say that, then according to the opinion, it says that Avilut B'Shabbat must mean full-fledged Avilut on Shabbat. Again, we don't accept that opinion. Our view, and that's what Tosfot said earlier, is that when we say Avilut B'Shabbat, we mean Dvarim Shebitzina, not a full-fledged Avilut. Okay, we'll stop here on the third line, on the top of Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph.